Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Whisker Report. We're the podcast dedicated to helping anyone in the pet industry, whether you're in animal welfare or running a pet business, earn more visibility, build credibility, and create buzz for what you do. Hello, everyone. I'm Mary Tan, founder and principal of Whisker Media, a pet public relations agency based in Buffalo, Minnesota. And joining me, as always, is my fabulous producer, Mark Winter of Pet Life Radio, who brings us you each and every week. Hey, Mark, how are you today?
I'm good. Aren't you going to label me a big kahuna too?
Yes. Oh, we were just talking earlier with our very special guest, and I called her the big kahuna of the pet food industry. And you're the big kahuna of the pet podcast industry. Yeah, how's that?
That's right. I like that. That's like a Hawaiian name.
Yes, exactly. Well, we're so honored that we are part of Mark's Pet Life Radio family. So today, as I mentioned, we're talking to somebody very special. This person knows everything about the pet business side of pet food. And many don't fully understand the pet food industry, but our guest today, Kimberly Klima, who is the senior editor of Pet Food Processing and one of the industry's leading trade publications, is going to help us out today. Kimberly spends her days talking with manufacturers, nutrition experts, suppliers, researchers, and innovators who are shaping what pets will be eating tomorrow. So if you've ever wondered where the industry is headed, or what companies need to do to stand out, you've come to the right place. Kimberly, welcome to the Whisker Report.
Thanks so much, Mary. This is going to be a lot of fun chatting with you today. I've always loved following you around at trade shows and talking to you there, and this is a fun opportunity.
Well, you're always a wealth of information. And if you haven't picked up Pet Food Processing, you need to, because especially if you're a manufacturer, it is like the Bible for understanding what is going on in your industry. So first off, Kimberly, let's dive into industry trends. But first, let's talk a little bit about you. So talk about your pets and how you found yourself covering one of the most fascinating industries in the world.
Well, I have only been in the pet side of the trade business industry for just about 4 years, a little over 4 years now. I was just mentioning that I'm heading to my fourth super zoo coming up. But I've been in the publishing industry in trade publishing for more than 20 years. Specifically, I've worked at my parent company, which is Sauslin Publishing, for 20 years this year. So I've been covering a range of business industries all related to food, a lot of time on the meat and poultry side, actually, and ended up now reporting about the pet food industry because our company decided that that was an industry that was growing and there was a lot to say and a lot to show. And so we developed Pet Food Processing Magazine back in 2018. And then I became the editor a few years ago. And it's just a super fun industry to cover. There's so much passion in the industry, as you know. And a lot of the technologies and the processes and the things that go on behind the scenes in the plants are very similar to other food, human food operations, which is what our publishing company covers as a whole. So it was an easy transition to go over onto the pet food side because a lot of the things that are happening behind the scenes are things that I had already seen in food, human food facilities before. So it's a nice little parallel industry out there that not a lot of people on the human food side realize that their pet food is being made in a really similar manner to how their human food is being made.
So what have you noticed in terms of pet food trends? Like since you started in the pet food industry 4 years ago, it's vastly changed.
Yeah, the first thing I noticed when I entered was, again, like I said, the parallels in the plants And the human, you know, everyone talks about the humanization of the of pet foods and the pet industry. And that's definitely translates into how the food is made, in that, you know, people are looking for high quality, high nutrition for their pets, who, of course, are their family members. And they want them to be made in the same safe way that their human food is being made. And that's definitely something that's evolved through the years, but it's picked up more and more with the new human food trends that are out there that are translating themselves to pet food, such as, you know, fresh foods and some of the ingredients like probiotics and other gut health ingredients out there. And a lot of those things are translating into our pet food. And I think you're going to see that more and more coming up in the next few years, because no one is going away from calling their pets their family.
How do you handle, there's so much debate, right, in pet food. Even I attended some veterinarian conferences, and like the argument of whether you should feed raw or, you know, just the standard kibble and stuff. How do you deal with that? With those debates on what to feed your pets?
I mean, it's tricky for us as a business publication, because we want to be as impartial, obviously, as possible. And we just want to relay the information to the industry. So we are using the experts out there. We're talking to the nutritionists and the veterinarians. We're talking to the processors who make both kibble and raw and fresh and freeze-dried and all the other things in between. And we're talking to them and allowing them to share their information, their studies and research, and talking about how their products perform and what the benefits are of them. And we don't really want to be the one who's going to say, hey, this is better than the rest, but we're, you know, want to be the place that people can go to get all the information. So we try to pool as many resources as possible and put them into our articles, so that if you're reading something in Pet Food Processing Magazine or on our website, that you know you'll get a good balance of information, of research and background, so that if you're wanting to make a, you know, informed choice, or if you're in the industry, you want to learn a little about a different part of the industry, then you can go to us for that information.
So you read a lot of press releases and different things like that. And what are some of the most popular, I guess, marketing claims that you see in pet food?
I mean, I would definitely say, like you mentioned, the raw is a big claim on the, you know, going back to the origin of pets, and pets are carnivores, and you need to go out there and be fed what they would naturally eat in the wild. And I know a lot of the companies that fall under that umbrella, they use that those marketing words that are talking about going out into the wild, eating as they naturally should and things. So I think, I mean, those are marketing messages. Other ones just really are trying to appeal to people's desire to feed their pets what's best, the most nutritious, most, you know, high quality food that they can find, and really tapping into the fact that ultimately, a pet parent cares deeply about what they're feeding their pets, and it's really important to give them the best that they can. And so most of the companies, when they're talking about their ingredients, they tap into that first and say, we know that you're there to feed your pets the best food they can, and this is why our food meets that criteria.
You mentioned like the probiotics and the prebiotics, and, you know, everything seems to be marketed as very functional. That seems to be something that obviously these brands know, that, you know, kind of know what pet parents want and what wording helps. I have a question. There's a lot of overseas pet food companies coming into the country as well. And what's interesting is, like, I work with a lot of New Zealand companies, and they are so strict in that country as to what claims they can make. And I'm wondering if, you know, the foreign competitors is having any impact on the domestic companies.
I think there, you know, there definitely is a rise on those companies coming over here and showcasing their products. And I'm sure they have to jump through a few hoops to work through our labeling and all the different things that we require. But I definitely think that as there's more competition out there and people are coming over with more strict claims about their products, then that is going to, you know, rise the competition in our domestic offerings. And being able to be a little more clear about what your product offers and what truly the benefits are. Some things are just claims and some things can be backed. And so I think pet parents are starting to really push for more transparency in the products that they're looking for. And they don't want just to be a sea of, you know, random claims on the products. They want it to be backed. So, like going back to what you were saying about functionality, like to truly explain what this ingredient, if you want to say, oh, I'm going to claim, you know, to have this ingredient in my product, what does it do for my pet? And maybe even prove that it's doing that if you can reference, you know, research and other items like that. But I do think that having that little bit more competition coming over from across the seas in our pet food aisle is going to make everyone have to look a little closer at the labels that they're putting on their products and the claims that they're making.
Wow. Well, this has been fascinating talking to you about this, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what makes a pet food company newsworthy and what businesses should know if they want to earn media coverage from Kimberly. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. Kimberly, each week we talk to pet businesses about public relations, marketing, and storytelling. So from your perspective as an editor, let's talk about what gets noticed. So how many emails do you get a day? How many pitches? And what catches your attention?
Definitely get a lot of emails. I won't put an exact number to it, but I was out for a week of vacation in the summer, and it did take a little bit to go through everything and to look through, you know, what's relevant and what's goes right in the trash immediately. But as far as pitches go, the ones that I appreciate the most are truly ones that are seen as somebody who knows who they're talking to. So I know it's hard. You're a PR person. You got to send out a bunch of pitches. And a lot of times they kind of a little more generic so that they can apply to a number of recipients. But the more that you can show to the recipient that I know your publication, I know what your audience is interested in, then I'm more interested. If somebody is sending me something that is about a new litter box, then I know that they're not following our publication because we are pet food processing. So that's obviously that's a quick and easy one that goes into the trash. But if somebody knows that we're interested in how food is made and the processing aspect and how the ingredients come into play, then right away, I know, okay, they at least follow and they understand what we do. And also just sort of offering up some different perspectives. We have an expert in these areas. They can speak to a number of different topics that I think would be relatable to your audience. Not just saying, here, I've got a story about, you know, a new product. But if you can say, and I can share with you expertise from our veterinary nutritionists, they have expertise in these areas. A lot of times, maybe that new product, that's something we'll write about. But if I read that their expert is has done research on probiotics, has done research on other things, then I might use them in the future on an upcoming story, not necessarily the one that they're pitching, but now they become part of my list of expert resources that we like to use in our articles. Because like I said, we want to relay the information from the experts in the industry. We're not the experts themselves, you know, we're sharing that information. So more and more, if I get a list of these are great experts, those have value on the long term, because then they can become my go-to sources on upcoming articles.
Yeah. And here's a tip. So if you want to find people like Kimberly, like there are software programs out there where I can put your name in them and out your last 10 articles are going to pop up. And so you can read your articles. They're kind of expensive. You know, I don't know if you've heard of them, Kimberly. There's Muckrack and Cision. You might even fill out things for them. They're basically, it's a journalist database, but there's a wealth of information. But the problem is it's like $5,000 a year. It's like super insane. But, you know, with AI, I bet they could find you pretty easily and read your articles. That's the magic of AI. But what irritates you about PR people? And, you know, what should people not do that will totally, like you mentioned, getting a pitch about a litter box. That's not what you cover. Automatic delete. So are there any other things? Like, do you like it when people call you over the phone?
Even though I am of an older generation and I'm used to talking on the phone, these days probably I still would prefer an email pitch rather than a call, just because, you know, we all screen our calls these days. You never know who's on the other end. But I'd still prefer, you know, an email pitch. And I honestly do not mind the follow-up email that a lot of people send. I have to do that too. You know, you send somebody an email, hey, would you like to be a source in this article? It goes down into their long pile of emails and they don't respond. So then I have to send that friendly little, hey, just bringing this to the top of your email box. A lot of people worry that that's annoying. And, you know, sometimes it can be, but I say to do that. Still do that. If you don't hear back from somebody, I try to respond with a quick, short response. This is not in our area of interest. If somebody sends me that litter box email, just so that maybe I can, you know, help them calibrate in the future. But I don't mind, you know, that follow up that does bring it to the top of my email box. There's plenty of times where that has been an oversight and it's just got bogged down in the day to day tasks. And then it coming up to the surface, I'm like, yeah, you know, you're right. Let me look at that again and decide if that's a good pitch that I'm going to be interested in following up on. So I certainly don't mind that. I wouldn't bombard anyone with a million of those little follow-ups. I mean, usually if you do a couple and it's kind of gone dead, then that's, you know, maybe not of interest. I do try to give, you know, quick responses to help people out, but I'm not going to say that I always respond with the I'm not interested, because, you know, there's a lot of emails that come piling in on a daily basis, but I don't have a problem with that. And really, I think that, you know, the biggest point is to try to make it as relevant to who you're emailing. Again, knowing the content that, and making it relevant, because that shows that you're thinking about not just mass sending out press releases, that even though I know that's how it's often done, but just calibrating them a little for the type of audience. If it's a, you know, a magazine like ours that's for the industry, if it's a consumer publication, if it's a product related publication, just knowing a little about who the ultimate audience would be, that shows that you're also interested in, you know, not wasting our time either. So that's helpful.
Yeah. What about trade shows? I know you have a team, so you kind of split it up, but what's the best way to work with you at a pet trade show?
Well, I love trade shows. Trade shows are the best. And when I moved over to the pet industry, I really fell in love with trade shows because as you know from walking the aisles yourself, they are so fun. There's so much passion going on, and there's so many great pets to look at while you're going up and down the aisles. It is way more fun than a meat processing trade show. Just mark my
word. Oh my gosh.
You don't need to go to one. Just trust me. They're way, way more fun. And yeah, I have a very small but mighty team. There's just three of us on our editorial team, and we all do come to the trade shows, and we divide and conquer so we can see as much as possible. So anything ahead of time, you know, reaching out to us, I know there's media lists that are distributed when we as media register for a show. Reaching out and saying, would you like to set up an appointment ahead of time is great. We really try to make so much the best use of our time. We have a team calendar that is just filled with meetings from the start to the finish of the show. And if we can do anything in advance that says, you know, please come by our booth, you can talk to this person, this is what we're highlighting this year, you're definitely going to get onto our list, because we, you know, we do have a limited time and personnel there. So anyone can get who can get in early is great. And, you know, we save time to do a little bit of our own roaming. We love going to the new products areas and the emerging brands areas so that we can learn what's coming. You know, the smaller ones, those are smaller companies that aren't going to have necessarily the PR power to, you know, reach out to us. So we want to give them a little bit of time as well. But yeah, anything in advance helps us organize our time when we're walking up and down the aisles for those 2.5 to 3 days. So it's valuable.
I bet you see like some cool stuff that's not in the pet food space, and you're probably like, oh, I wish I could cover that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, there's accessories, and obviously at Super Zoo, the whole grooming area is phenomenal to walk by. It's nothing that we cover, but we always make sure to go by because there's just so much interesting stuff and great people over there. And, you know, you can just take the long way around before going to your next booth and check out what's going on there. But I like the way that the show combines it all, because that way you can learn about food and nutrition. You can learn, there's a few equipment companies that come out there that showcase their packaging options and other things like that. And then of course, all the accessories and toys and other, you know, help you around the house stuff as a pet owner. Those are great to look at as well.
That's so awesome. Oh my gosh. Well, we just have to take a quick break. And when we come back, Kimberly's going to talk about a very special event her company and magazine is sponsoring this fall.
Talk to the Paw.
Hi, this is Amy Schumer.
Hi, I'm Jane Lynch.
This is Mandy Moore.
Hi there, I'm Kate Walsh.
This is Catherine Tygo.
There's only one station that gives you the scoop on wagging tongues and tails and who's walking who in Rent and Tinseltown. Pet Life Radio, the Tail Wagger.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back. Kimberly, tell us about your big event coming up this fall.
Well, thank you for letting me tell you about it. It is called the Pet Food Processing Exchange. And this is our third year of putting on this 1.5-day educational event. It's in Kansas City. This year it is from September 29th to October 1st. And what we did a few years ago is we decided that we know that the industry has limited time to learn about what's going on. Obviously, we're hoping they're reading our publication and are going to our website. They're out there hitting trade shows and learning about what's going in the industry. And we thought it's valuable to learn from other members of the industry. So we wanted to bring people together and give them the opportunity to learn from a number of expert speakers that we have put together in our agenda, but also to be able to network and learn from each other, because I think that's what everyone says. Trade shows are great, but you have an agenda. You've got to cover your booth. You've got to have meetings. And sometimes people don't have as much opportunity to sort of interact and pick each other's brains in a more casual environment. So we wanted to give people in the industry the opportunity to come together. That's why we called it the Exchange, because it really focuses a lot of on idea exchanging and networking. And putting it together, the content is, I always like to say, it's like the pages of our magazine in on stage form. We have different topics. We have trends topics. We have food safety. We have different processing topics out there. This year, we're going to be talking a little bit about AI, and that's definitely of interest to everyone. So we want to put all those things that people are used to reading about in our magazine in the human form, using those experts and letting them share with the audience their perspective on different topics.
So it's going to focus more on education, correct? It's not like your typical trade show. So if you're thinking, you know, there's a lot of networking, but it's really focused on learning.
Yes, definitely focused on learning. We know that there's other, you know, there's trade shows out there, and we didn't want to throw one more in the mix and have another trade show, even though trade shows are great opportunities to learn about products and services that are available in your industry. But we wanted to have an opportunity to people to get a little more educated, and the learning can be done from, you know, sitting through the sessions. We also have a couple great panels, so hearing those panel discussions, but then also taking that information, interacting with other members that are there at the conference, and then ultimately taking it home and putting it to work in your business right away, to being able to apply some of these business practices. If you're a processor, applying them to how you're doing your operations. If you're a supplier, maybe an ingredient supplier, learning about what the processing side of the business is interested in so that you can help provide better ingredients or equipment to help this part of the industry. So that's what we want to give everyone, sort of the tools to do their business better, ultimately.
That's amazing. So how can people sign up?
You can go to petfoodprocessingexchange.net. But you can also, if it's too long and you can't remember it, you can definitely find links on our website, which is petfoodprocessing.net. But you can go there. There's all the information. We have our full schedule is there. We have our great lineup of speakers, which I can remember. I believe Mary Tan might be one of those great speakers. Yes.
Yes. I'm so excited to come. This will be awesome.
We are very much looking forward to you sharing your insights as a longtime member of this industry. And we have a lot of great experts that are lined up, different perspectives. Some are processors themselves. Some are members of companies that support the industry and everything in between. So we have some university people, retired people. I mean, everyone that has a vested interest in making the pet food industry a better and more prosperous industry for all, they're all going to be there. So we're really hoping that we can get more people to attend, because the more more people that are there, the more interaction and the more great conversations that everyone will be able to have.
Wow. You know, it's just amazing. The pet food industry is it's just exploding. And then when I first got into the pet industry, I started reading your magazine, and like, there's so much that goes into it. All the machines that it takes to process, and it's your magazine. I highly recommend that if you're in the pet industry, you read it. And just to get, you know, if you have pets yourself, like just to know how it's made, how the food that you're feeding your pet is made. So I want to end with any final thoughts, recommendations, you know, to people who are pet service providers, pet retailers. What's your biggest takeaway when it comes to PR and pet food?
I think the biggest takeaway is to just really keep your passion for the industry out there, because I mean, that's what attracts people in the industry. That's what keeps them going. You can tell the passion that everyone has. And if you lead with that, lead with your passion for the industry and for your pets, then it kind of just, the story tells itself. There's a lot of new brands out there. And one of the fun things we like to do is highlight some of these new emerging small companies that are out there. And the thing that I love to do when talking to them is find out where their passion started. And there's so many great origin stories to new companies and new brands out there. And I think anytime you're trying to sell the story of a new brand as a PR person, just lead with that passion. And then that story kind of tells itself. And that's the stuff that's interesting. And that makes, that differentiates one brand for the other. I mean, a lot of times people are worried that their product will be another Me Too product. There's one similar like this on the, you know, on the, in the industry, on the shelves. To lead with the passion and the reason behind where this product came from, I think that always is a great way to attract attention and to stand out, you know, against your competition.
Wow. Well, that's, you've just given us a wealth of information and we so appreciate it. And, you know, I can't get this sight out of my mind, but like a meat processing show. I mean, what are those like? I mean, it's dead animals. Like,
I don't know. Now, luckily, there is no dead animals. You might see a couple of videos here and there of the inside of a plant, but they're not as fun. I mean, you know, there's a lot of immense pieces of equipment that are very impressive. I will say some of the things that are in our food processing plants are quite impressive to look at, but you're not going to see an adorable, you know, dog walking down the aisle, or maybe catching a sight of your cat Franklin in his little stroller going down the aisle. I mean, you can't get away from that as being a fun way to do work. And, you know, it's a fun thing to call work. And we're really looking forward to, you know, our trip to Super Zoo so that we can see what's out there and visit some new furry friends at the same time.
Yes. And Franklin and I will see you there. He's very excited to see you again.
Great. I love my Franklin time for sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your expertise. And this has just been so incredibly insightful. So I really thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And thank you, of course, to our listeners for joining us on another episode of The Whisker Report. If you have any questions you'd like us to answer on a future episode, or if you'd like help earning media coverage for your pet business, you can find us on whiskermedia.com. And we can also, of course, put you in contact with Kimberly. So until next time, bark loud and purr smart.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.